Hello and welcome to the DeFi Daily, a 10-minute or less DeFi and crypto update. I'm Pat, and I'm here with Amy today, as always, and today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. Remember to check us out at Twitter at the DeFi Daily or visit us online at www.thedefidaily.com. As always, thank you to our sponsor, Bitwave. Bitwave is a DeFi investment and digital asset management platform that does allocation monitoring, token tax tracking, gain loss reporting, and more. You can check them out online at bitwave.io or at Twitter at Bitwave Platform.
All right. Well, today the DeFi market hit $6 billion in TVL. Pat, what does that mean?
TVL is a metric that was invented specifically around DeFi because of the way DeFi works. So the way DeFi tends to work, and I think most people listening will be familiar, is you take coins and you somehow stake them or provide liquidity, lock them in a contract, smart contract that's out there. That involves creating an Ethereum transaction where you actually send your coins or tokens to a smart contract, thereby moving them from your wallet to the smart contract. TVL, total value locked, is a measure of how much coin, how much Ethereum, how much coinage in USD, once it's converted over, is locked in these different smart contracts. So what you'll see is the way the market of dominance then works within DeFi is you look at the total value locked on these different contracts. Right now, MakerDAO is the number one. It's been going back and forth with Compound over the last few months, depending on who had the better returns from yield farming. Aave is up there as well, as is YAM, is number six. But you can see it's really split right now pretty evenly. That's, we're going to be talking later about the actual market dominance of Bitcoin. The market dominance within the DeFi space is actually very, very even, although obviously Compound and MakerDAO are quite a bit ahead of a lot of the other projects.
Great. Cool. All right. Well, yesterday Bitcoin was worth more than all the New Zealand dollars in existence. It dropped to the 35th largest currency in the world today. New Zealand was back up to 34. But still, that's amazing, right, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. That's really, really crazy. And I think what's particularly notable about them overtaking the New Zealand dollars, if you go and you look at sort of like the market caps of all the currencies in the world, and market cap is not, we tend to use that term in, stocks you use it in Bitcoin and crypto, we use it. That's not usually what they use in fiat currencies. They look more at monetary policy, so like dollars in circulation. But let's just call it market cap for the sake of comparisons here. What's really notable here is that if you go down the list of currencies below the New Zealand dollar, you get to, I don't know, I guess you would call it the smaller currencies of the world, like Iran, North Korea. I mean, obviously not, they're not all tiny ones like that, but really, New Zealand is one of the first major currencies that has been, I would argue, battling with this is a major currency from a major economy that's used for major worldwide trade. It's one of the first ones that Bitcoin has really been battling with here. And that is certainly notable. The other thing that's notable here is that that's just for Bitcoin. If you look at cryptocurrency in general, which I like to look at cryptocurrency in general because it really shows adoption of everyone's acceptance of this idea of digital math-based currency, it's actually way above 34th. It's actually closer to 27th. So that's based off a $370 million, billion-dollar market cap. And at 27th, it's higher than the Norwegian krone, the Czech koruna, the South African rand, and the Dutch kroner. That is very significant. I mean, those are very substantial economies that are moving a lot of currency around. So cryptocurrency being larger than that is very, very notable. Other things to mention is that market dominance between Bitcoin and Ethereum. So right now, Bitcoin is running about 59% compared to Ethereum about 12%. Interestingly, XRP is tailing up the lead there in third at 3.6%, but it really gets clustered a lot there. So, as you normally will see in tech adoption cycles, there is a 80% here. Now, it happens to be 60% for Bitcoin, but if you take Bitcoin plus Ethereum, that's sort of your 80% of the market, and then everyone else is kind of below that. So very substantial. That's $222 billion of Bitcoin market cap, $47 billion of Ethereum. What you've also seen, though, is that has changed recently. Ethereum has been making a very heavy run towards Bitcoin and capturing more market cap, up from 9% earlier in the year to now 12%. So I think we're going to continue seeing that. I mean, DeFi is driving so much of this. DeFi fees are, and Ethereum fees are driving a lot of the price. So we're going to continue to see Ethereum go up and capture more dominance from Bitcoin.
Great. All right, other news. I saw that Ethereum infrastructure company Consensus is raising $50 million on a convertible note that is being led by JP Morgan, who plans to make a $20 million strategic investment. What are your thoughts on that, Pat?
I think this is insanely notable. I think this is so incredibly noteworthy in our industry as to be, I mean, you know, JP Morgan, this is the company that was, whose CEO was very publicly berating all things crypto not that long ago. So here we are with them putting $20 million into the leader of cryptocurrencies, especially with when it comes to finance. So Consensus is obviously, I mean, that, you know, I'm not sure they really need the money. I think it's sort of an interesting question. They've raised a lot of money in the past. So by itself, it's not notable that a crypto company is raising money. And this is obviously a huge round. But it is certainly notable that it is JP Morgan leading the round on this and putting that much money in. It makes you wonder what they, I mean, obviously, I think we all know what they see. Like, they see that the future of finance on this is decentralized finance. And even if it's not, like, I think that's the an interesting kind of comparison here would be like, I don't know if they really look at YAM and say, okay, that's the future of finance. I think they look at smart contracts and they say that that is absolutely the future of how investment grade banks and money, basically how money markets and stock markets are going to work in the future. So they want to be invested in something that's more or less working on smart contracts and looking at the underlying tech there. Even if, like, you know, I don't know if they really believe in some of the DeFi projects per se, but it is incredibly notable and it's a very, very good bullish sign for the industry.
Great. All right, this last one is a little bit fun, but I saw a Cointelegraph article that Paris Hilton drew a picture of her cat, Munchkin, and it was auctioned off for charity. It brought in $17,000 worth of ETH, and so now her pet is forever immortalized as a NFT, and a couple charities got a nice donation. Pat, talk to us about what cryptographs are. What about crypto art? I don't really get the concept there. Maybe you can explain it. But in general, is the blockchain good for the art industry?
Well, I think there's a couple of things to talk about here. There's the blockchain's impact on the art industry, which I think is very, very significant. There is Paris Hilton and her action here, which I don't think is particularly significant, but it is worth mentioning. So Cryptograph is doing NFTs that are tied to celebrity produced artworks that you can then bid on and have your money go to charity. I don't think that they think that they're producing works of notable value, although I could be wrong. The idea of an NFT, just so everyone knows, is a non-fungible token. The difference from an NFT to a fungible token. So Ethereum by itself is a fungible token, or any of these other tokens we're looking at, like that we talk about, you know, YAM, MakerDAO, all of these compound. When it says fungible, what that means is that any one token is the same as any other. So I don't, you know, when you look at fungible tokens, it doesn't matter. You know, if you sent me, Amy, if you sent me one token today, one Ethereum today and then another Ethereum tomorrow, and then I send one Ethereum out, it doesn't matter which of the two Ethereums you sent me. There's total fungibility between them. Now, obviously, that's not exactly right for tracking purposes. So when governments and the FBI look at how coins move around, it's only partially fungible from a technical aspect, but from a, you know, how much you really care about aspect, tokens are more or less fungible. A non-fungible token is one that is uniquely identified. So if I take a piece of art and I somehow tie it to a image that gets displayed or a crypto kitty, which is in fact a algorithmically generated based on some data, you know, little image that shows up based on it, that is non-fungible. It matters greatly that when I sell you my crypto kitty that happens to be pink with octopus tentacles, that you're getting the pink with octopus tentacles crypto kitty and not one of the other ones. So in this case, it's an NFT that was produced around an artwork that Paris Hilton did. Now, what's weird about it is I guess that there is some amount of ownership rights conveyed with this. I couldn't find more details about this, so I couldn't find the actual copyright data or anything like that, and I don't know what that is. So at the end of the day, they're taking this image, they're posting it, they're actually putting it up in IPFS, which is a peer-to-peer distributed file system, and then they're taking the hash of that, and that's what actually gets generated on the NFT. So, you know, I'm not sure there's real value here outside of the novelty. I think that something like, you know, another example of something that could be used for NFTs in the future would be like you know, armor for a video game like World of Warcraft. So if you had World of Warcraft, you want to go ahead and you want to create a blockchain-based economy for different things that you create, you would essentially use NFTs to create that, because it does matter that I get, you know, the bit of armor I'm buying for you, it does matter that that is a particular set of armor. So there's cases like that where there's real value that you would be able to take that and then translate into like a video game, or perhaps if you were using NFTs to represent real world, real property, real estate, things like that. That is more interesting. This is sort of gimmicky and more of just like a charity fundraiser. So, you know, NFTs are very substantial. The art world in general, I think we'll see publicly accessible provenance for art would be on the blockchain would be incredible if we ever got there. There's obviously a lot of rent seeking between here and there. So like companies like Christie's that actually do sort of their version of title insurance for art, they actually do have a vested interest in not having all provenance really clearly laid out. But even that, like, it's sort of garbage in, garbage out. Like if someone shows up one day with a Picasso and says like, oh, my grandma's had this, and you really can't prove that, it doesn't actually matter if you then digitize that. That really goes, you know, it's worth noting that goes for blockchains, real estate as well. So if you go to a country like the US, which has relatively good records and title insurance and all these constructs around real estate property, you don't gain a lot of benefit by taking that to the blockchain right now. But that also goes for somewhere if you go to like, you know, Kenya, where they have potentially really bad records around real property. Well, that also doesn't help you, because all you're doing is if you're putting on the blockchain bad records, well, you still have legal liabilities. You're still gonna have to go to court to settle issues of property. So very, very substantial overall. Lots of cool stuff that's going to happen here over the next few years. I'm not sure this is the watershed moment, though.
All right. Well, on that, I think we'll end it here for today. Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the DeFi Daily, and have a great Tuesday.
Have a good one.